It is Way of the Warrior, episode 291. Lots of stuff to talk about. And then don't forget, tomorrow, Fabricio Verdum, if you are listening to us in Grand Rapids, he will be in Grand Rapids on Old 29th Street at Fight House MMA. You can find them online, fighthousemma.com and fighthousemmagr on Twitter. Going to be an exciting day. I know that Fabricio Verdum's been retweeting all the people that have been talking about him. So if you'd like to make a digital connection with Fabricio, now is apparently the time to do that, because he's tuned into Grand Rapids and looking for those sorts of things. So jump on Twitter and start talking to him, and then meet him tomorrow. I believe they're going to do autograph signings from 11:30 to noon. And then the seminar, if you want to actually train with Fabricio, that'll be noon to 2, fighthousemma.com. And with that, we'll get into the show.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 yep, seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
It's all over.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. This week's episode brought to you by Fight House MMA, bringing in Fabricio Verdum this week. We are excited for that. I know Evelyn is very excited about that, so my three-year-old would be very excited to meet Fabricio Verdum. So we'll see how that goes.
She's going to challenge the champ?
She is going to challenge the champ, so I'm excited for that to happen.
Get in line. She's going to have to fight Arlovski first. Let's do that. Let's make that a thing.
Evelyn and Frank Mir. Okay.
Oh. She'd take it to him. What? Who
she'd,
said that?
She'd outwork his cardio, I'm sure. That would be a thing.
She could run around the house all day, so I'm thinking so.
So lots of stuff happening this week. We've got two Bellator events, Bellator 143 tonight as Joe Warren and Elsie Davis rematch. And then, of course, the big tournament with Tito Ortiz is Saturday night as it goes head-to-head with the UFC that is in Japan. So some big stuff happening this weekend that we will talk about. But no news bigger than the Nick Diaz NSAC.
We're back to NSAC, by the way. For those of you confused, because we tried it both ways.
Yeah, we have.
They're back to NSAC now. So
NSAC.
They were NAC for a while, yeah. And they're ridiculous all the time.
Who cares? Yeah, they're terrible.
Kangaroo court. That was like the perfect term used by Nick Diaz's lawyer in this situation.
It really was, and I've seen people online that are saying that, you know, Nick Diaz got what he deserved and he should have shown respect. And
Matt Hughes is who you're talking about. Talking about Matt Hughes.
I'm not necessarily talking about Matt Hughes.
I'm talking about
there
Matt
are more
Hughes.
People like Matt Hughes out there, which I find very, very interesting, because I really think those people, whatever your opinion of weed is, I think you're missing the point. And the point is, There is no actual precedent set here. They just clearly go in and make up whatever the hell they feel like making up and cast it down, and there's nothing that a fighter can do about it. Now, mm-hmm. We all know that Nick is one of those guys who kind of writes his own book, and lots of fans love him for that. And so it's not really that big of a deal, I think, to him that he can't fight in Nevada. He'll figure out other stuff to do, because that's what he's not the busiest fighter
right.
in the world, right?
But just so people are clear, when you say it like that, you make it sound like he can fight other places, and he can't because everybody...
Except for Japan. He probably could fight in Japan.
Well, I mean, not for the UFC, though.
Right.
The UFC, that's their home base, and it's not because of... Especially after you see Dana White's comments, it's not out of some overwhelming respect for the NSAC. It's simply a licensing issue that they have to contend with, where other states will not basically break the will of another state.
Sure,
I'm not saying that properly, but you kind of know what I mean here.
They won't go against Nevada.
The New York Athletic Commission right. won't license somebody if Nevada hasn't licensed them.
Right.
It's basically consideration to other licensing boards. And what you've got in this situation is the UFC also extends that consideration to any card that they run. So if they run a card in Japan, if they run a card in England, wherever they run it, the same considerations are there. And it's not because they necessarily agree with the suspension or think those things are right that have happened. It's because of the way that the licensing works. So what you have basically is a death sentence here from the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and mainly because I think they feel like they were owed more than they actually are. Let's not forget, I guess, you know, I joke a lot on the show where things aren't a constitutional matter. This literally is a constitutional matter. And this is a situation where they were punitive, where Nick Diaz invoked his constitutional right. And they said at the beginning he was going to do that. But these asshats on the board, oh, we're going to keep asking questions. And then we're going to get mad about it. And then somebody's going to say, we should lifetime ban him. Look, this is a third offense. I told you this was going to be harsher than we expected because this was a third offense. And whatever you feel about the weed being an offense, which most people think it's BS at this point, it's still a third offense for them to essentially hand down a lifetime sentence to a guy who's 32 years old with a 5-year suspension. Because if a guy's not in the cage for 5 years, you know, I could say you could go to 26, 27. You could go that young. If you keep him out of the cage for 5 years, that's a death knell essentially for his career because you can't recover from that. I will say it again now, and you can rewind this. What are we on? 291?
291, yes.
291. Write 291 down. So whenever the hell John Jones comes back, I'm telling you he's not going to be the same, and he may get beat. And I'm saying that regardless of opponent right now. So when you hand down 5 years to a dude, he's done. He is done in this business if he can't fight. Obviously, he's going to appeal this. Obviously, I think in the light of day that we've now seen in the ESPN coverage and the Fox Sports coverage and some of the mainstream coverage, in the light of day, people are kind of seeing the ignorance and the idiocy of this commission that we've up until now joked about. We've joked about how stupid they are. And they are stupid, stupid people. Make no doubts about it. Because basically what they do is if they like you, they try to make excuses for you. And that's how you have to, quote unquote, play this game. And you can be critical. I mean, and I'm sure you have the same feeling. Sometimes you just go in and play the game, right, Eric?
Well, sometimes I think you have to go in and play the game. However, it's your choice if you don't want to. And it, as you said, it's his constitutional right if he doesn't want to make himself guilty by speaking. He doesn't need to incriminate himself. That's not something you need to do.
Yes, and it's this situation, too, where you can tell they were upset that he didn't want to talk to them. And he's not legally obligated to talk to them. Now, again, this weird situation with these state commissions is they're basically granted unlimited power. There's no real appeal nature here for most of these instances. I do find it interesting. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I do know that they just got overturned, which is nearly unheard of for state commissions,
right,
for a ruling they made back in March. Which I think shows you how stupid these people are. I mean, we as people that sit around and dick around on microphones and are on the internet half the day looking at Reddit, I mean, we can tell that this is dumb. We can tell that these people are sitting there, they're trying to make an excuse for a guy that they like, or they're trying to hand out, you know, a whip into a guy that they don't like. And it's exactly what happened here. You know, 5 years is ridiculous enough, too, because I think people would have been pissed anyways, but I mean, this was a third offense. And again, we won't argue those merits yet. I'm sure we'll get to them in a couple minutes. Third offense, you know, 2 years, maybe 3 years. I think people would have been upset, especially a lot of the weed guys. And I'm not, that's not disparaging, but there's a lot of proponents that are really into it. But I think maybe a guy like you or I would have looked at it and go, man, that really sucks. And that's a stupid rule for weed. But it was his third time, so he got popped for 3 years. But I think you just start pushing it past that. And the main thing, too, is this woman just like, are we going to lifetime ban him? Like, right? Like, are you stupid? This is weed we're talking about. Ronda Rousey said it, and we'll get to that, too. There's people in there that are taking steroids, which is immensely dangerous to their opponents if they're clean. Immensely dangerous to them in the cage. Just a terrible thing. 100% is wrong. 100% helps them in the cage. There's no arguing about it. These guys are doing all of this stuff, and they're not getting busted. They're getting suspended sentences, or they're getting a year after having worked for 6 months. That's what's going on there, and it's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, and so the two examples I have on the board recently is prior to July when the UFC testing policies went in place, which is where I'll get to in a second.
But which we aren't in yet, by the way.
We're not in. These guys fought in January, which I'll get to in a second. But prior to that, you had Hector Lombard and Anderson Silva both get popped for steroids. Anderson Silva was, of course, in the same fight that Nick Diaz got popped for. Anderson Silva sat out and pushed back and sat out and pushed back and sat out and pushed back and got a year suspension, but he'd already been out for 7 months.
6 to 7 months, yeah. So January.
So, yeah, so
it was 5 months from the hearing. And again, I said, pushing these back, it doesn't hurt you at all in these situations. I mean, even Nick Diaz, his is retroactive, so it's really only 4.5 years. I mean, but still ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and Hector Lombard, same thing. Got a year for being popped for steroids. Now, if this was past July, this is what would have happened. According to the UFC new rules, a first offense, it would have been a 1 year to 2 year for marijuana. Second year, whatever that first thing was, if it was a year, it would have doubled and then the fines would have doubled. Third offense, it would have doubled and then the fines would have doubled. So you would have been in the same place. And I wonder if they had landed on, if they had landed on 5 years naturally, as opposed to saying something dumb out loud, like, are we going to lifetime ban him or what, bro? Mm-hmm. If that would have been a little bit more acceptable, because it does line up with what the UFC is doing. Now, that said, I'm with you on, I think the ruling is dumb. What I will caution everybody who wants to get on their high horse and talk about how they should have thrown the book at him because he doesn't respect them. They should have thrown the book at him because weed is a drug that's illegal in the system and so forth and so on. I'm telling you, as Ken is telling you, that that time out of the cage is a death knell for a UFC athlete, John Jones or Nick Diaz. I'm telling you, friends, you are going to see a lot of your heroes fall down in this new testing policy. I promise you that. As the sport catches up to the drugs that they're taking, we're going to have this debate every single week. Why do I bring that up? Well, because if they don't change who is in the commission, we're going to talk about how ridiculous this weird amalgamation of I like Ken so he gets a year, I hate Eric so he gets 20, is going to go on and on and on and on as all of these guys get caught in this net, because it's going to happen, and I promise you that.
Yeah, I don't know how many times we're going to have this discussion, though, other than
the all fact, of the times.
We're going to have a lot of discussion about suspensions and dudes having this happen. I think a lot of them are going to be smarter about it. I think the other thing, too, is I think we really have to get a look at what we're punishing and whether it's fair, whether it's, you know, there's justice in the way it's meted out. And, you know, we joke about Nick Diaz and his personality and the things that he does, and whether it's missing a plane or freaking out impressors. I don't think there's any question for people that are reasonable. And again, I'm going to make a blanket statement. For people that are reasonable, I think that there are situations where if you smoke a joint, it's going to help you out. Whether if it's with chronic pain, whether if it's with anxiety. And if you want to say that those kind of things, okay, then you're receiving an unfair advantage, fine. We can make that argument. But that's not where anybody's coming from right now. People are just saying, oh, it's illegal and you should know it's illegal, so you're done. We're not talking about it anymore.
But I guess, like, I don't know that it's okay in this case, and I think that's the point of having a commission, and that's the point of not having black and white rules. Is, let's not forget, he fought in a cage against one of the most deadliest fighters in UFC history, who was on steroids.
Yes. And that dude who was on steroids is going to be able to fight in January if he wants to.
So what I'm saying is, I don't know that you can look at those cases individually and go, because it's your third offense, and because you don't respect me, and because I hate you, and because I think weed is a performance-enhancing drug, therefore I'm going to do this. And then you don't take into account that he had to go the entire fight fighting Anderson Silva as he was on roids.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. And whatever you want to believe about the dick pills or not, that's what he was doing. He was on steroids. So I think you take all of these things and you put them in the hopper, so to speak. And that's where this outrage comes from. And that's where people are just appalled. And that's where Ronda Rousey, Dana White's biggest star in the building, he said it. She's the biggest star in the UFC. She's out there saying there's no reason we should be tested for weed. And I agree with her. I don't think it's a help or a hindrance in any situation. You know, I know there's dudes like Joe Rogan who talk about how they love training on it because it opens their minds to the possibility. And again, I'm not going to judge you or not. For me, I start counting time waiting for it to be over if I try. So, I mean, I'm not a weed guy. But, I mean, if you want to do that and that's your thing, cool. If you're looking at the health of the sport and you're looking at the health of fighters and you're looking at all of these different things, the fact is we're so out of whack with the way we treat dudes with steroids and now the way we're treating dudes that are on drugs that essentially have no impact on the fight. And I think that's where some of this outrage comes from as well. We're treating weed 10 times worse than we're not even treating it the same as steroids. And, you know, I'm not the tin foil hat kind of dude. But, I mean, there's got to be something to it at a certain point where maybe they do just want these fighters on steroids just so they can get through these fights and keep training and get through those injuries, because they're not punishing dudes that are on steroids. Now, that's going to change and we're going to have discussions and somebody's going to pop at some point. So maybe we'll see. Maybe this won't look so out of line. But it certainly looks out of line right now with the current regulations. It certainly looks out of line when it's a situation where all three of his offenses were weed. They were THC metabolites. It certainly looks very suspicious when you have two WADA tests that showed him clean that night. You have a Quest diagnostic test that showed he was dirty. And then the NSAC says, well, we've used Quest before, so we're going to believe them. So 66% of your evidence in this case clears Nick Diaz. That's another thing a lot of people are missing here.
Sure. Well, and
that's why he didn't answer those questions. Because 66% of the evidence, when you look at the tests on this night, he's clear. He's clear by WADA testing. Olympic-level testing clears him of even using the weed. Like, that doesn't exist. One Quest diagnostic test, where they put his name on the thing, by the way, which they're never supposed to do. Because, yeah, I mean, hell,
and this is,
you look at a Nick Diaz test, you're like, oh, we better watch for the weed, guys.
Right.
You know, that's what happens.
Well, and as I said last week, remember that he was taking tests in the UFC offices to try and see where he was in his taking of, mm-hmm. you know, whatever he was doing, and had to take a number of tests to test clean to know, okay, this is his baseline or whatever he was doing there. Those were all supposed to be private tests that were then released, so the commission got to see them, which can't help but taint their way of making a decision.
Which, again, shouldn't be admissible, but these people are idiots. There's no way a judge would let somebody in. You know, his lawyer, rightfully so, tried to object to some of this evidence, and one of the commissioners laughed and overruled him himself. I mean, this is what you have. You have an advocacy from that panel, and I'm not disagreeing with the process. And you know, they're going to get their asses sued off, I think, at this point.
For sure.
It's good that this happened to a guy like Nick Diaz, because he's got some wealth and he's got some means. He's been fighting for a while. He's not, you know, Anderson Silva rich. He's not John Jones rich, I'm betting. I mean, I might be wrong. But, I mean, he's definitely got some means. He's got a legal team. And let's see if we can't, you know, take some of the bite out of this commission. And not because I don't think these athletes should be prosecuted. Not because I don't think they should be punished. But because this idiocy has just gotten out of hand with the commission. I mean, literally, go pick a day that the NSAC has had a hearing. And go find some of your favorite MMA guys on Twitter. Go find any of us.
Uh-huh.
Any of us. It doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be Eric. Find anybody. I mean, that's when you can unite this MMA media community.
For sure, yes.
And you can unite Dana White, because he's not a fan. He's not a fan. He's by design of the fight capital of the world, and they're swinging their pieces around as much as they can because they're able to. He's got to deal with this commission, but he's not happy about it. You can tell.
Well,
you can tell none of us are happy about this. None of the fighters are happy about this. I mean, you've got people boycotting.
And this is where I was going to go. Dana can't be happy about this, and the city of Los Angeles or Las Vegas shouldn't be happy about this because of what started happening. You have mm-hmm. Leslie Smith, who's a teammate of Nick Diaz, who's like, done, mm-hmm. not fighting in Vegas anymore. Sorry, UFC. Oh, and then your contender for Demetrius Johnson's title, Henry Cejudo. Yeah, he won't fight in the fight capital of the world either. So you can't have that thing in Vegas. You're going to have to put it in another spot. And then, like you alluded to, in Australia, somebody who you might have heard of, I mean, she's coming up in the world, named Ronda Rousey, mm-hmm. who's dear friends with Nick Diaz, says this is the dumbest thing she's ever heard of. And what happens if Ronda Rousey decides she's not fighting in Vegas?
Right. And, you know, Henry Cejudo is a pretty big name there. I mean, he's an Olympic gold medalist.
Undefeated.
He's going to be the guy that goes in there. And again, this division, you know, 290, 289, 288, go back through, listen
right,
to the podcast.
Yeah.
It's not the most influential division in the UFC. We understand that. But, you know, that's a dude I have a lot of respect for. And this was before last week. You know, and you can go back
sure,
to those podcasts.
Sure, yeah.
Like, dude's an Olympic medalist. Let's not count him out. You know, it takes a lot of hard work to get there. The guy's got to fight a lot of different people. The guy's gone through a lot of drug testing. The guy knows what does and doesn't affect you in the cage. If there's anybody who's going to be pissed about this, it should be other fighters if they truly believe that this is any type of advantage. Here's a guy who's gone through Olympic testing, who's got a gold medal. I mean, that puts him in the top 1% of the 1%.
Right. Yes, yes.
In the world, yes. In knowing what these tests actually mean and what your body can actually do and can't do and what helps at these levels of fighting. I can't ever question Henry Cejudo. You know, I don't. So when he says this is stupid, I believe him. I'm going to take that at face value at this point. So you're right. You know, we're at the point where Ronda's speaking out. Now, and here's another interesting thing. Ronda's made her money. She doesn't need to fight in Vegas ever again in her life.
Nope.
And UFC will move an event for Ronda. Will they move it for Henry Cejudo? Probably not. Will they move it for Leslie Smith? Not a chance in hell. But you know what? If they respect him, they'll probably throw him on other cards without a big issue.
But you
Ronda Rousey, though.
Yes.
If she's the one that says, I'm not fighting in Vegas, that hurts Vegas. That takes money out of the pockets there. Floyd Mayweather did only 500,000 buys. That cash cow's gone unless he fights somebody for real in his 50th fight.
Right. Well, he retired. I don't know if you heard that.
Right. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, UFC would kill to have that. Yeah, okay. They run 12 to 13 events a year. So Floyd at this point has done, you know, what, 2.5 million.
The UFC's
going to kill that number.
They would kill to do that 12 times in a row. But let's also remember, this is not a discussion about boxing, but if you wanted to get into that, like, if Mayweather's gone, nobody else is pulling 500,000 pay-per-views.
No.
That's not a thing.
No. And the thing in the situation is, yeah, they're the fight capital of the world, but if you're a voter and you're in Las Vegas or you're in Nevada and however these stupid things work, and I'll be honest, you know, I meant to look up a little more about how these things happen because I got to imagine it's some type of online contest to be a commissioner in Vegas. So
you have to be really good at Flappy Bird and then you get out.
I don't even think these dudes would be good at Flappy Bird. They'd be that dude that just always falls because they never hit the damn screen when the game starts. So I don't know what you do about this commission, but and it's tough too because, I mean, they're so deeply ingrained. Vegas is the home base of UFC, not because of UFC wanting to just be there by the venues. It's where fighting happens. It's where everything happens. And, you know, the only other option truly for fighting to have a home base would be somewhere in California. And those guys are dumb too. They're not as dumb as these dudes, it seems like, but they're well, the home of wonky tests, man.
It really depends on what you want to talk about, because they might be just as dumb.
So,
and I would argue that the only other logical place, it's not legal.
That's what I mean. They're not going to set up in New York. I mean, right. Taxes and all that stuff, nobody's going there.
But let's say it wasn't. It's not even legal. So your dreams of Madison Square Garden aren't a realized dream at this point.
I guess I don't know. We're all at a loss at this point. They're going to get sued. I think they will lose in court. When you actually get in front of
they will people. Absolutely lose.
Yeah, but how much will they lose? Because again, we can't forget this is a third offense. And when you actually get to court, you know, as much as, you know, Colorado and Washington State have done well and made their money and people are just kind of staying home and chilling with their weed and not at the bars, as much as we know those are true things and this isn't as bad as alcohol, according to some people, or obviously as cigarettes, according to most people, or other harder drugs, again, according to most people, as much as we know these things to be fact and as much as we know these things to be true, in the end, it's still illegal. So,
except, to quote my friend King Mo, what if he was actually clean?
And that's where the court is going to be very interesting because he's got, again, 66% of his evidence. He's got tests that he did with the UFC that may not be allowed in as evidence in a real court. And again, this is why he didn't say anything. Because if he says stuff, it's all admissible. Because
yeah, sure.
That's the ridiculous part of this kangaroo court as well. As stupid as it is, as poorly as it's run, as terrible as these commissioners are, once you go in there, you go under oath. So it's not even like talking to a reporter. It's not even like having a spontaneous comment in a situation. You go under oath. Everything you say is admissible in court. That is why he didn't say a thing. So Matthew, shut up. Shut up. I was so upset when I saw that. You know what? This isn't about being a punk or not a punk. Go grab your hay bales. Get the hell out of here. This is about constitutionality. This is about America. This is about all those things a lot of us had a discussion about last week as we see what 9/11's really done to our country. And I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but, you know, if you're the all-American farm boy, you should care a little bit about the Constitution and worry a little bit less about whether or not somebody looks like a quote-unquote punk because you didn't grow up with a dude like that and you don't understand where a guy like that comes from. Matt Hughes is full of crap and he wants to be some American hero. Shut up. If you want to be an American hero here and you want to be a good old boy, you know, why don't you defend the Constitution, which is exactly what Nick Diaz did here.
And he did
it because he's going to end up in court.
And what Matt Mitrione did, which is what started the Matt Hughes.
I didn't hear Matt Mitrione's comments.
Well, that's what happened is Matt Mitrione said something on Twitter, which is what got Matt Hughes involved. And so there you go. But, to your point, Matt's position with the company is, you know, supposedly the liaison between policy and the fighters. And if this is your stance, Nick Diaz was acting like a punk. You're not even looking at the evidence. Like Nick Diaz's job, regardless of what you think about Nick Diaz. And I think Patrick Cote had the best tweet as this was happening. Like, look, I don't like Nick, but this is
idiotic, just completely moronic.
Go back through the podcast. I've never come off as the biggest Nick Diaz fan. But this was stupid. This was stupid the way it was handled. It was stupid just to hear how petty these people were. I mean, that's what catches you off guard. Everybody with your Fight Pass subscription, they got to see how petty these commissioners truly were.
Sure.
And it's funny when it's the other way. Oh, man, they're trying to give this guy a shovel to dig his way out. Boy, up, they handed it to him. Well, when they got mad, they got real petty, and it landed on the other side. And you saw what happened. You know, Nick Diaz doesn't have to say a word. Burden of proof should be on them in this case. Remember, they're a governmental body. The burden of proof has to be on them. And again, I understand there's licensing and regulations, and those fall into different legal areas. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you should be able to prove a guy is guilty of something. And they really couldn't prove that he was guilty of anything if you took this evidence and looked at it unbiasedly as a whole. I just don't believe you can look at all this evidence and be able to prove he was guilty. Do I think Nick Diaz smokes a lot of weed? Probably. Do I think he probably tries to ramp it down and make sure he's clean on his tests? Probably. Do I know these things and can I prove them? No, I can't do it. They couldn't do it. And the dude's now got 5 years and he's never going to fight again if this ruling holds up.
And I think they're going to get sued. I don't think it's going to stand up, and we'll see what happens. But the other thing that you can pay attention to that came out of that commission hearing was that Jake Shields got 50 hours of community service for punching Husamar Palhares. Why I bring that up is because Palhares was able to delay his hearing once again and has not been sentenced. And so,
do you think these guys split these things up too? Because if you were, because what you should have looked at, and we know that they're too dumb to do it at this point, what you should have looked at, like you said, was Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz, and they should have been sitting in the same room at the same time, and we have the entirety of the situation.
Yep. And then you make a judgment on that. You both broke the rules in different manners.
Right.
Which one was more egregious? How do we, it's third offense, but weed. First offense, but steroids.
They should have almost got the same thing when I'm looking at it as a layperson. It doesn't have to be. So why isn't Jake Shields in the room? Because it's the same event, too. Evidentiary rules would dictate that it would be best to have both of these dudes in the room whenever talking about either
in the Jake Shields ones, for sure.
Yes.
Because you would look at that and you go, Husamar, this is your 77th offense of breaking somebody's leg. Jake Shields, this is your first offense of defending your life in an octagon where a guy is trying to rip your leg off.
Right.
Or shoulder off.
And like I said, evidence-wise, you just want both stories. And you don't have them. You don't have them in that instance. Because that's truthfully a little bit of his and his him against him. You got the video. You can see the video, but intent and what actually happened there can be different things. So why aren't they required to be in the same room? Why don't you use your unyielding power as the NSAC and make both these dudes sit down at the same time? You want to let Palhares push it, tell Jake he's got to come back next month. It's not going to affect if he's suspended or whatever it is, but he got community service. So maybe you make, hey, Palhares, if you want to be licensed, you have to be here today. Or you get 12 months blanket. I mean, I don't care how you do it. Just have some common sense. You and me, we're sitting in a room 2,000 miles away from Las Vegas. Give us 10 minutes and we could come up with something that makes more sense than what these people who live this life and do this and are paid to do this and are basically in control of billions of dollars in revenue do every day. This is stupid.
And let's not forget that Mazzagatti, who was at the center of this insanity between Palhares and Jake Shields, they decided to do nothing with him. Like, he got no ramifications.
Was he even there? I didn't.
I don't believe he was there, but it doesn't.
Like, how do you not have all the people there?
Right.
Like, if you're so pissed about people not answering questions, why are there not people to ask questions of in other situations? Because, I mean, I think outside of some of the bigger UFC stories of the year, this is one of the biggest, like, rule violations we've seen. There's a dude who keeps cranking submissions, and there's a guy who punched a guy after the bell, which no matter what, I think Jake Shields got exactly what he deserved.
I have no problem with
that.
But
I think it's very interesting to kind of just look at these situations and go, you don't even know the whole story. You don't even know what's going on. Palhares isn't even here, man. What are you doing? Just suspend him. He didn't show up. Every other court in the country, which is how these guys are acting, right?
Supposedly.
Every other court in the country. If you don't show up for your date, you're going to go to jail. You're going to be held in contempt. Obviously, you can delay things and do other things. But at a certain time, they set a date because you want all those witnesses in the room. You want every form of evidence to be on hand when you make a ruling. So at a certain point, if I can get five people in a room and there's some type of lawsuit about something, you need to be here too because these other four people are going to be here. So this is now your date. And you skip it, you're going to go to jail. So if you skip this at the NSAC, you get a blanket 12 months and you don't you don't get any consideration until you actually come in and actually have your hearing. It's like Jim Tressel, NCAA.
Sure.
He could come back anytime he wants, but he's got a show cause hearing he's got to do. He doesn't want to do that. His players probably were guilty of getting some benefits they shouldn't. And I'm not going to argue the specifics of whether the NCAA is out of line. Guy's just going to sit out. So why isn't Paul Harris just sitting out until he has his show cause hearing of some type? This is stupid. This is stupid. And just I think we're really highlighting how inept this commission is. And we've joked about it now for a couple of years. But at no point has it really cost somebody their career the way it has Nick Diaz at this point.
And to your point, if I'm remembering as we're talking here now 30 minutes in, did they or did they not do exactly what you said with Jones and Cormier? Were they not at the same hearing at the same time?
I believe they were at the same hearing, yes.
To tell their story?
Again, maybe they were just both like common sense dudes. Well, let's both be here and give our sides of the story. Because right. I certainly get that vibe from DC whenever I watch him on TV.
Right.
And Jones has enough people around him to go, we should probably just get this taken care of. But that's another interesting thing because that's another thing with these two dudes. They both had a fight coming up. Because let's not forget that they had that fight coming up and they had to get had to be licensed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So again, they had no choice.
But what I'm saying is that was the only time recently I can remember that they showed up at the same time in the same place to tell their story together.
And didn't try to punch each other or threaten murder.
Right,
and
then just didn't try to kill everybody. Yeah, for sure.
Nobody threatened to murder anybody's kids. That was exaggeration. They threatened to murder each other. It was pretty excessive.
All right, like I said, there's like 19 events this weekend. We will talk about them next. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, brought to you by Fight House MMA, who is welcoming Fabricio Verdum tomorrow in town in Grand Rapids on Old 29th Street. That will be from noon to 2, signing autographs from 11:30 to noon, so catch that if you are in West Michigan or want to make the trip. And with that, we will jump into all of the stuff that's happening this weekend. Tonight, you've got Bellator 143, which is Elsie Davis and Kentwood's very own Joe Warren.
Now, wait, isn't this Fedor Henderson? That's all I saw from the presser. I thought Fedor Henderson was happening.
It's Fedor Henderson. Uh-huh. And then,
Henderson, Couture.
Couture, yes, is what you mean.
Why do you keep doing that?
I don't know.
Like, Henderson already whooped his
you
ass.
You really want to see that rematch.
I don't need to see that rematch. He whooped his ass.
Yeah, so it was Couture
it's
and...
Fedor Couture.
So...
That's happening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Tune in to Spike TV. At 8 or 9 o'clock, probably not 10 because they're a little smarter than
it is not 10.
In that
area. It's actually 9 o'clock, so you will get to... Yeah, they did do some weird stuff, like there was Hoist Gracie and Sakuraba were squaring off.
Oh, really?
They're also not fighting.
I didn't see that. See, I saw the Tito thing and some dude, I didn't know who that was. I think. No.
McGreary? Yeah.
Yeah, good for him. And then, yeah, 8 million pictures of Couture and Fedor. That's what I saw. And obviously, they were kind of combining some of the Bellator 143. And then they're bringing back Dynamite, right?
Yeah, so it's
Dynamite. It's not New Year's Eve, right?
Correct. It's tomorrow, unless there's some, I mean,
no.
Even, you know, Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or whatever it was this week was Sunday, right? So that's their New Year.
They're doing two shows in two nights, Bellator is?
Yeah, back to back. So
that's a bold move, Bellator.
Right? So
I'm going to watch tomorrow.
Tonight is the one that nobody's going to watch with Elsie Davis and Joe Warren, which is going to be a fun fight. Beltran and... Kendall Grove, so two UFC alum, will be going mano a mano. Should be some fun stuff on Spike. And then tomorrow night, you get complete MMA overload. As Ken alluded to, Bellator is bringing back Dynamite, not on anybody's New Year's Eve. It is just a regular... A regular day in
is the it like Filipino New Year's Eve?
Or? Not that I'm aware of. No,
Argentinian New Year's
so
Eve.
So what that means is that they're
the North Korean leader birthday of some sort.
They're having a birthday party for North Korean.
For somebody over there that's about to get, like, macheted.
Yes.
By Kim Jong-un.
So what Ken is alluding to is that means they kind of combined three things into one, essentially. So you'll have some glory fights. You have Paul Daly is fighting in a kickboxing fight in the glory portion of the card. You will also have a four-man light heavyweight tournament that will be part of this. So those guys will fight it through two fights tomorrow night, and then the winner will...
So where is this happening, where they're letting this happen, the Bellator Dynamite? Because I thought the attorneys were totally off the board.
I actually don't know where the Dynamite card is.
Okay. I'll look that up real quick.
And then the main event is Tito Ortiz and Liam McGeary. And McGeary is the favorite, I think, 5.5 or 6-1 over Tito Ortiz. Tito has spent most of the week running around talking about his fight with Ryan Bader that was very similar, where everyone thought that Bader was going to steamroll him, and he ended up beating Bader. Mm-hmm. Bader, I should say. Bellator is such a hard one for me to call because the talent level is such a disparity mm-hmm. from the UFC. Like, guys that come over from Bellator just get smashed, and UFC fighters that go over to Bellator just annihilate everybody.
But sometimes they get caught, and you don't expect it.
Yes, and then sometimes they get caught. So it's a weird one for me to call, but I just think there has to be an end to the Tito Ortiz Fountain of Youth, and I think we might be at the end of it. I highly doubt he walks away as champ tomorrow night.
Yeah, again, like you said, I don't know where to put this one at this point. Oh, by the way, we're in San Jose, so it should be a commission license, 2 fights a night for these dudes. Yeah, I don't know where to put him. I certainly don't put him in a situation where with whatever one of these dudes wins, with Phil Davis and King Mo and Newton and those dudes, I don't put him in a situation where if he's able to beat McGeary. I don't put him in a situation where he's going to hold that belt very long. He's going to try to cash in where he can. Sell some, sweatshirts and do what he can with it. It's just Tito Ortiz, he's a guy that'll get some eyeballs there, which I think is good for Bellator. But yeah, contender status, it's up in the air at this point. Because we know he's not one in the UFC, but we're not dealing with the UFC.
And to your point, I think it's a great way for them. Again, if you go back to the Ken Shamrock Kimbo Slice fight, brought a ton of people into the brand. Now, they weren't able to capitalize on it in the way that I think they should have. However, again, you can bring a whole bunch of people into Spike on Saturday night mm-hmm. when everybody else is scrambling to, because you got to wait, mm-hmm. which is the problem with this competitive thing, and what you brought up. The UFC is starting at 10. Spike is starting at 9. So you've got a light heavyweight tournament that's happening. You've got Glory Kickboxing that's happening, and you've got a title fight at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And if you look behind me, unless you're a Pride super fan, UFC Fight Night in Japan might not necessarily be the best fan card of all time.
See, I disagree. I think Roy Nelson's always going to bring people to the cage.
I'm more referring to the below part.
It's right. This is where I was going. It's going to take a while to get there. This thing starts at 10. So depending on where you are in your MMA viewing for the night, you might be kind of wiped out before we get to what is probably the decent casual fan fight of the card, which is Gegard Mousasi and Uriah Hall. And again, this isn't taking anything away from some of these amazing Japanese fighters on the undercard. It's simply they're not that well known.
But if you look, Horiguchi lost to Demetrius Johnson. Mm-hmm. Mizugaki was the sacrificial lamb for Dominick Cruz to come back to. Mm-hmm. So like, these are not guys that have been dominant in the UFC.
No, I love this heavyweight fight, though. This could be a great heavyweight fight, too, after what happened with Mir and Arlovski. This could be one of those, palate cleansers as far as heavyweight fights go. Because, I mean, as bad as some people think Roy Nelson looks, I mean, dude's got cardio for days.
He does have cardio for days.
And Josh Barnett's always been, that prototypical wrestling background. I can grind you out, but I've got big, big ground and pound. He's one of the last of that dying breed of just guys that can finish you with ground and pound. Most guys, they can punch you out on the ground, and they might be able to get a sub from it, and they might even land enough damage where it stops the fight, but most guys aren't Josh Barnett, where they can knock you out, and you're on the ground. And that's just because most dudes just don't have that old school technique.
Well, and
good or bad in some situations, but Josh Barnett's one of the best at it in the world.
I would not say it's a bad asset. I think that catch wrestling is something that's probably a hole in the current MMA game that, people might want to lean towards. If you look at Ronda Rousey training with Jean LaBelle, there's a fair amount of catch wrestling knowledge that's floating around in her camp that clearly helps her think through her philosophies of how she's going to get people to where she wants to get them to. Mm-hmm. And Josh Barnett, as we've talked about, I get that he doesn't fight very much. I absolutely understand that, but he sits at number 6 because he's one of the most dangerous guys in the heavyweight division for that very reason.
If somebody calls tomorrow, let's say they announce tomorrow, Josh Barnett is going to get a world title fight. There's no argument on the internet.
Zero.
There's nobody going, he doesn't deserve this. He doesn't have a chance. Doesn't matter. He's Josh Barnett. So he's a dude that, he's legit no matter who he goes against. Again, is he a favorite against Kane? No. Is he a favorite against Verdum? Probably not. Is he a favorite against JDS? Maybe. I mean, that's how much respect he has, and he deserves it. He's been doing it a long time, and he's a dude that hasn't taken a ton of punishment. Like you said, he's not a guy that's going to be at the end of his career like Big Nog. God bless him.
Sure.
But, I mean, yes, right. Which is pretty amazing because, I mean, he went through some of that grind that Big Nog did.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He went through that Pride meat grinder. He didn't fight as much, but, I mean, he did some of those Pride fights where he'd show up the night of and they tell him who he's fighting. Which isn't the best way in the world to keep yourself healthy because you're not exactly sure what you're preparing for.
Right. Yes.
So he's one of those dudes. You put him in a title fight, and there's not a lot of guys online that are going to complain. I mean, you're going to have to be a super fan of somebody else to say they got screwed out of a shot to really want to have to complain about Josh Barnett being in a title fight. So I love this fight against Roy Nelson. I think
who do you like in it?
Josh Barnett, until he loses, he's a guy I'm just going to keep going with because he's a guy that just keeps showing up, and he will keep fighting and doing what he does. And until he does different, I can't count him out of any fight.
Now, you alluded to the fan palate cleanser, so to speak. If you're not really up on your Japanese fighters like Kid Yamamoto and Horiguchi and Mizugaki,
mm-hmm.
You get to Uriah Hall and Gegard Mousasi. Uriah Hall has been on quite the tear since he kind of figured out the cadence of a UFC fight,
mm-hmm.
which has been exciting to see. But what do you think happens when he runs up against Gegard?
I think Gegard takes this. Gegard's just kind of one of those dudes. He's just ruthless. I mean, and he doesn't ever look like he's in a fight.
No, he looks
like scares the crap out of
him. He looks like he's bored to be there, for sure.
Right. He's bored to be there, but he beats the crap out of people while he's bored. So it's like, what is going on with this dude? He's got a little bit of that Terminator vibe when he's in the cage. He's obviously taken a couple losses here and there, but I mean, he's a guy, I think, against Uriah Hall, where Uriah Hall's going to really, he's going to get that test we've all kind of been wondering. Where Uriah Hall lands, I don't know if Uriah is going to be able to pass this test. It'll be interesting.
And if he does, it makes that division a whole lot more interesting. And of course, if you're not watching Tough 22, I totally understand. But I wanted to take a minute before we bounce for this weekend and remind you, number one, you can get all of the results online at WOW Show, all of the things that are going on this weekend, both on Bellator and in the UFC. And two, Ryan Hall, not Uriah Hall, but Ryan Hall, who's currently on Tough 22, won his second fight in the house, technically in competition, with what's called the 50-50 position to go to a heel hook. And I have to tell you, if you're not checking out the highlights of what this guy can do, pay attention, because it's the leg lock version of Ronda Rousey.
Mm-hmm.
He just is goading people into these positions, literally jumping to 50-50 and subbing them. And while he won't fight this coming week, because that's not how the show works, if he makes it to the finals, pay attention, because he's a very fun guy who's transitioned from high-level jiu-jitsu into MMA and very fun to watch because, I mean...
Would this be the American Imanari?
Probably, yes. No, yeah, we can call it the American Imanari. Why not?
No.
Okay, if you need anything, as always, you can catch us on Twitter or on Facebook at WOW Show. We will catch you tomorrow at the seminar with Fabricio Verdum. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.